Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cried the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's on. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance. We'll be right back.
Hello, my freaky darlings, and welcome to Late Night Poets After Midnight Show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Ferengi, Kerouac, and Morrison, then you are on the right night. But please check out our other After Midnight shows. Join Jeremy as he hosts the Headliners Ball Thursday morning. On Friday, Pam takes you into Break On Through. Saturday, Joanna Faye, Janet, and Barbara as they teach you the fine art of becoming part sinner, part saint. And every other Sunday, join Robert M. as he brings you the solace of shadows. And these shows are designed to come outside the lines with rich, raw emotions, tinged with colloquial language, and thereby pushing the envelope to expression and opening up new avenues of thought to a pen and voice. So, pull up a chair, relax, and open your mind. I'm Rex, my co-host, Pam Ray, and I can't wait to get into and read your words. Evening, Pam.
Good evening, Rex. How goes it?
All righty. What's up?
Well, life is just full of awesome sauce, beautiful weather. Got to go for a walk today. Wrote a poem. Now, you know what? I get to hang out with you, some other cool poets. And, you know, just enjoy company and reading and commenting on poetry. So, yeah, life is good. I like it. And, we got a good lineup tonight. Poetry inspired by Will Cuppy, who was apparently a satirist and a journalist. I personally have to admit that I had not heard of him before. I just, as most of my prompts, stumbled across him by accident. So, which it was actually a good accident because we got some great poetry in response. All right. But, we got a couple of callers. Shall we go ahead and bring them on?
Sure.
All right. Sounds good to me. First, I'll bring on Laurent. Welcome, Laurent. Glad you could be here.
Thank you, Pam. Good evening. Good evening.
How you doing, Laurent?
Hey, I'm doing better now.
Excellent.
And then I have brought on Randy. Hello, Randy. Glad to have you here.
Hello, Pam, Rex, and Laurent. Good evening.
Hello, Randy. How you doing?
Hey, Randy.
Doing very well, thank you. Glad to be here.
Glad you come in.
All right.
Why don't we all?
Okay, well, first of all, we're going to kick it off with the one carryover that we have from LBJ. And, oh, that's not it. That is the show link. Okay, let me try this again. All right, here we go. Do-do-do. All right. Here we go. And this is Bubble Bath by Betty Page. And it goes like this. Exotic fine scent, enchantment in the tropics, lush, luxurious, seductive attire, soft, cozy bathrobe, slippers, lingerie beneath, so elegantly disrobing, tossing aside piece by piece, laced, satin, fine silk, strewn across the floor, popping open pink champagne, sweet chocolate truffles, lit scented candles, rose petals overflowing, completely naked, dipping in aqua, clear, sudsy, steamy, bubbly, soft, subtle, sweet flesh, shampooing my hair, adding deep conditioners, caressing my body, lick across my neck, trace your tongue along my curves, kiss all parts of me, do as you desire in every way that you wish, take me, I am yours. End poem.
Great read. Yeah, thank you very much. Well, from the LBJ contest, I hope that's you, Betty, and not Lyndon, because that would be a sore thought. Randy, why don't we start with you, please?
Well, as usual, this was a wonderful piece by Betty, and it I thought it really fit the prompt very well. Every man has a right to a Saturday night bath, as she so eloquently described it. And, you know, it went line from line, as it normally does with her, one line leading to another, drawing you in, keeping your interest in a very exotic way, as is her usual style. And, you know, it did not disappoint, coming down to the end with the lick across the neck, trace your tongue along my curves. I mean, wonderfully done, very well read by Pam. I really thought it was a great poem.
Thank you, Randy. All right, Laurent, what you got?
Well, before I looked to see what the prompt was when I was reading the poem, I thought to myself, this isn't, you know, just a bath. This is somebody who's going to spoil themselves. All the refinements are there. In the way she disrobes, opening the pink champagne, sweet chocolate truffles, putting on the full court press of luxury, so to speak, with scented candles, rose petals overflowing completely naked. And it's not till that penultimate stanza with a lick across my neck, trace your tongue along my curves, kiss all parts of me, that I then glance down to see that the prompt was every man has a right to a Saturday night bath. And I had to laugh because it's not the kind of Saturday night bath that most guys take. But this is very clever, very well done, very well read.
Excellent. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, you got to read it. What about you?
Yeah, I enjoyed this one. It was delightful. It was sensual. Had wonderful imagery in it. What I really like about it is the fact that she related to the quote in her own way. Like, there's many ways a quote like that could be taken, and Betty did her thing with it. She made it sensual. She made it, you know, just beautiful in its imagery. You know, so much of this sounds wonderful to me, the popping open pink champagne, sweet chocolate truffles. You know, I like that she brings in the idea of adding in the deep conditioners. And, you know, this is definitely offering up your man more than a Saturday night bath. So wonderful write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Considering the picture and how she walked into this, it did, like Ron said, it did walk in that note of just a night to be pampered, the chocolates, all the luxurious notes, the satin, the champagne, getting into steamy bubble baths with that champagne. Wasn't expecting those two last stanzas, but they did kind of, they meet Betty's pace, and it did. I had to chuckling, and I had to toss in that note to Lyndon, because this is way out of left field from the quote that I offered. That I wasn't expecting this one at all. So, well done, Betty. Nice play. All right, Pam.
All right. I'm going to go ahead and put Lawrence's poem up, and then Randy, your poem will be after Lawrence. So,
okay.
There you go, Lawrence.
Thank you, Pam. My prompt, what was my prompt? It was the image. All right, murdered sleep. Plangent crow, you sing raucously of doom. To whom do you croak under midnight's moon? For my ears only, was this your intent? Punishing me thus for a youth misspent? Or do you address my neighbor, that great wallowing beast, whose non-stop chatter is loudest volume, says the least. Perhaps the Dane who occupies my left, his wife 2 years missing, no sorrow left him bereft. Vagrant fowl, are you lonely, separated from your flock, sense of time twisted by a broken avian clock? Can you tell magnetic north? Does it ping from internal scan? What made you choose me, the poor and innocent man? Well, largely innocent of the evil men do. Smashed a mother mouse flat, then bade her babes adieu. I did lose my temper at the grocery store. Left that quarrelsome shopper spread-eagled on the floor of aisle 4. My goldfish died last Thursday morn, overfed until he sickened, floating upside down, still in a forlorn. Hormonal dog, lured away by a bitch, came crawling back later, and I beat him stiff with a switch. Some minor transgressions, to these I plead guilty. Please, avert your gaze, you accusatory and flinty. My wife, my honor holiday. When does she return, you ask? Due back almost practically any day. Her reassembly, a hopeless task, disposes of pieces far away, buried deep in a wooden cask. Now be gone, you've had your say. Your murdered sleep, be off, I pray. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, you get to start it off.
All right. Yeah, and I really enjoyed this one. I had read it earlier, and I just had to smile at the dark humor. I thought that was very well played. As always, you have great imagery. I thought I could, you know, it seems to me like you really had fun with this one. You know, you worked on the whole idea of, you know, the murder of crows, the murder being a group of crows. I thought it had a very Edgar Allan Poe feel to it. And not that your style was exactly like Edgar Allan Poe, but you know how a lot of his, and I'm thinking more of his short stories than his poetry, about how oftentimes his short stories deal with people who have paranoia. Like it comes up that like the Telltale Heart type vibe, where here's this crow and the messenger of woe, the messenger of death, and it's outside the door, guy's window, making a bunch of noise, and this man is trying to figure out, why can't this crow bother anyone except me? And then at the end, where you were like, and your tone of inflection was just perfect with this reading. My wife, why on her holiday? When does she return, you ask? Due back almost practically any day. And, of course, you know, I don't think we have to be guilty of anything to all appreciate the fact that some of those birds definitely murder sleep first thing in the morning. So really clever write, Lawrence. Very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Well said, Pam. Thank you. And Randy, how about you?
Yeah, I enjoyed this. From the noise of the crow bothering his sleep and going down with the list to the neighbor. Great wallowing beast, his nonstop chatter, loudest volume, says the least, and then going into the laundry list of things that he's done wrong, but they're minor things, like we all have, nothing serious, you know, killing a mouse, taking someone out to the grocery store, an annoying shopper. This was pretty funny. I was laughing inside throughout the whole read. I was really drawn into it. And I agree with Pam that it had a flavor to it, a Poe flavor to it, that was very interesting. But, yeah, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a fun write and very well read.
Well, thank you, Randy.
Thank you, Randy. All right, Ron, I like that note with the Plangent Pro off the start off. Something noisy, raucous, even melancholy. But you went with a touch of toe with this. You've got the raven introduced to begin with. You've got the telltale heart in here. Cask of Amontillado down the bottom, so to speak. You worked in quite a bit of goodies with this. And also end up that broken avian clock. I thought that was a nice touch. It kind of hits on that note of the heartbeat, so to speak, but it's all in his head. And then that thought, can you tell Magnetic North? Does it ping from internal scan? What made you choose me but a poor and innocent man? Okay, a death thought. But then you go into all of the little tidbits. They're kind of false notions. Little things one can own up to, but that last stanza, damn. Her reassembly, a hopeless task, disposed of the pieces far away, buried deep in a wooden cask, now begun. You've had your say, you've murdered sleep, be off, I pray. That, I like that last line. It is kind of a nice note to a poem self with all the little tidbits you put inside this. Well done.
Thank you, my friend. It's hard to write about a crow or a raven and not be touched at some point by Poe.
I get it, but I wasn't expecting the other two inferences, which made the story that much easier, but well played, just for the tune that came out of it. And I did get a kick out of that last band, but it does offer almost a half-hearted thought of being sorry, and it's trying to cast away the crow or the raven, so to speak. Ah, be gone, I pray, please, go away. Your chattering is keeping me up at night, and it's wearing on my mind. And you know what? I'm a guilty bastard. All right, Pam, where would you like to go next?
I think she stepped away, Rex. She left a note for me to go ahead and read mine.
Okay, so she put it up. Cool. Go ahead, Randy.
Okay. My poem is based on Prompt 16. Etiquette means behaving yourself in a little better than is absolutely essential. And the title is Chameleon. It's intriguing how we deal with social pressure, desiring acceptance, taking extreme measures, signing up for classes on refining our manners so we appear sharp, displaying proper manners, like dressing properly at the appropriate time, always prepared to react and never cross lines that have been put in place by those who know how to live in style, making sure to let it show. The key to survival without selling your soul, using minimum effort while staying in control, showing enough etiquette to be consequential, and effort no more than is absolutely essential. End poem.
Great read, Randy. Thank you very much. All right, Laurent, what do you think?
Well, it's called Chameleon, and the emphasis is on etiquette, and I think that works perfectly in my mind, because when you like dressing properly at the appropriate times, always prepared to react, never cross lines. When you're a chameleon in a social group, you're going to blend in a fashion that does not make you stand out, but rather blend in. Even with a lot of refinement, you're signing up for classes, refining your manners, all of that is well and good. But if you can't blend in at the right time without creating a fuss, and then, you know, integrate yourself in the way that you want to, it can be a social situation, can be difficult. But to me, the key is that last stanza, the key for survival without selling your soul, using minimum effort while staying in control, showing enough etiquette to be consequential, and effort no more than is absolutely essential. Don't break a sweat when you do it. Otherwise, it kills the whole image, and for yourself as well. If you have to strive and strive and strive to do something like this and maybe fail at it, and maybe it's not for you. So effort, no more than absolutely essential. I thought this was quite well written. I like the brevity of it, quite frankly. And it has a lot to say and does so with a little bit of humor. Nice job.
Thank you, Laurent.
Thank you, Laurent. Pam, are you back?
I am, yes. And I definitely enjoyed this one. When I had read it earlier, I could see that touch of humor in it. I thought it was filled with good advice and wisdom and with a great connection to the chosen prompt. This is going to sound weird, but it reminds me of this book I read. And I, honest to goodness, I can't remember the author or the name of the book, but it was a murder mystery. And a lot of it was told, some of the chapters were told from the point of view of the serial killer. And in one of the scenes that was from the point of view of the serial killer, he was talking about how it was very important to never stand out, to dress in such a way that you blended in, but not only that, to make sure that when you tipped at a restaurant, you didn't tip too high because then you would be remembered, and you didn't tip too low because then you would be remembered. And, you know, I thought chameleon, and I know that's a weird connection, but it made me think of that whole idea of someone who, as your title says, chameleon, just wants to blend in, doesn't want to be noticed, doesn't want to be called out. And I do like the bite in the end line, showing enough etiquette to be consequential and effort no more than absolutely essential. Wonderful lines there, Randy, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Thank you, Pam. Everybody's taking up that back end, too. I guess I got to go there. Everything fits in that last answer, Randy. Randy, it is a matter of about being nonchalant and easygoing without bending the knee, so to speak, without offering up committal to a certain precept. So the idea, as you said, whatever you offer up, make it consequential in the moment. But you do not give more than is needed in that moment. Just like Dan said with the tipping, you're going to tip, choose always 15% as the minimum, never more than 20%. That'll get you noticed. So that idea works for this too. You might walk a little over your normal edge, but no more than that, and no less, obviously. So I like that too.
Thank you, Rex.
You're welcome. All right, Pam. Where you want to go?
All right. Up next we have Never Have I and Herein Lies My Proof Spoof by Liquid Mind Forever. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
All right. Never Have I and Herein Lies My Proof Spoof by Liquid Mind Forever. So, determined through extermination's domestication to believe, though conceived while conceived and deceived, not to be grieved when relieved. Believe, never, any bird under wraps in any from any of the occupation preternatural will ration, his state or station remain a faithful nation. Interjection. First of all, what they tell is faith, but blind belief is something for which we have no true evidence. Full. No capacity for more, whatever that more may be. Continuation. Whether locked down, knocked down, tied down in solitary confinement with 3-inch cockroaches with only a swing to rock itself, plus another incarcerated flightless in tandem with bandages and with urochromal, can possibly pre-slay its bird brain violently hanging from untouched toenail. As a rarity, disparity lets go among its numbers ill at rest. I've always been attracted to carry-on leftovers of the wounded stature, put out to pasture, without non-commutcher, realize, along with Paul and Tarsi, how wise people grandized out. Verisimilitude indirectly points out how seeming righteous inherent behavior, or rather, more succinctly put, how a downloaded infraction on perspicacity stupidity. Food, drink, roof, door, pizza, beer, fast, steel, foot, shoe, blood, bud, light, loaf of thick, dust. The dead ride inside non-aluminum cage of microphages to smack down to their level a beveled wooden wing as they deny every other thing passively or loudly, proudly, devoutly, domesticatedly on record ritual groups. Not even if you offer 20, 30, 150 trillion megabucks, ducks in a row, could I believe, I like damage control, extol the role model, with absolutely zero zilch to say about it. Signed, nitwit, with unrequited pit stops, who sits rocking itself and never quits. End quote. Damn. All right, let's start off with, all right, Pam, since you disappeared, you got first leg.
All right. Well, first of all, great read there, Rex. I like the title, Never Have I. It reminds me of the game Never Have I Ever. She just takes a bite at a few different things, the idea of society and refusing to be put in her place. At least that's kind of the thought that I get. I really like how she always she plays well with not only end rhyme but also inner rhyme. I really like whether lockdown, meltdown, tie down, and solitary confinement, 3-inch cockroaches with only a swing to rock itself, plus another incarcerated flightless in tandem with bandages and mercury chrome. It just feels like the whole idea of slowly just going insane, especially with the word mercurochrome. I also like that she brought in Paul of Tarsus and what they use to come to realize along with Paul of Tarsus, eyes how wise to agonize doubt. And I like that instead of, she didn't go back to his old name, Saul, which was his name before he went blind, but his name after he had been blind and then regained his sight. So there's this whole idea of seeing what hasn't been done, which you haven't seen before because your mind has been opened. Wonderful staggering of the stanzas. I'm not usually one for overuse of periods, but I thought with it being purposely done in the one stanza, food, drink, roof, door, it really added a great punch to those lines, lifting off to me those everyday mundane things that people are so obsessed with that they don't see the bigger picture. The idea of what's being taken away from them. Like they don't see the idea of freedoms being taken away because all of this other stuff is shoved in their face. Just really powerful, right, intriguing, and definitely without a doubt thought-provoking. So very well done.
Thank you very much, Pam. And Laurent, how about you?
How interesting can a poem be? There's so much to talk about in this, it's almost difficult to know where to start. Her sentence construction and words that are not overly punctuated for pauses and continuations can be a little different, difficult initially, especially given the way the text is presented. You've got to be careful to gauge your emphases and de-emphases. This is a fascinating piece that uses language so skillfully. To quote something, whether lockdown, knockdown, tied down in solitary confinement with 3-inch cockroaches, only a swing to rock itself, plus another incarcerated flightless in tandem with bandages and mercurochrome can possibly freeze frame its bird brain mindlessly hanging from uncut toenails. Never have I ever read anything approximately like that. And there has to be something there that shows a good deal of appreciation for the skill of her language. This seems to talk about the general dumbing down of the population of the United States, specifically, perhaps the world, I don't think it is, the estrangement of self in many ways in society, the almost celebration that we have of ignorance and the distrust with which we view intelligence, our lack, as she says, downloaded in fractions of perspicacity, stupidity, almost a lack of critical thinking. I could go on. There's so much to take from this, but it's another truly excellent piece.
Thank you very much, Noel. And Randy, how about you?
He's gone.
Oh, okay. Cool. You're right. There is a note to the sort of dumbing down, but it kind of hits on that idea of settling, of having an intellectual mental capacity and being forced to settle into the norm of what is. That, it was that first one, especially when you hit down, can possibly freeze frame its bird brain mindlessly hanging from uncut toenails. Kind of hits on that notion of being stuck within a useless marriage, so to speak. And there was another piece that, again, that thought, the food, drink, roof, door, pizza, beer, thatch, steel, foot, shoe, blood, thud, right, loaf, a thick thud. Again, it's on that domesticated note, but it also walks on that that tone of wanting the freedom to kind of hunt alone. But she does hit on that note of enjoying, where is it? I've always been attracted to carry on leftovers of the wounded stature put out the past without none the nomenclature to adventure indenture. Again, that thought of being inundated with indenture. And that this the fifth one kind of hits on that note of trailer park living, so to speak. And then that end of shine nitwit with unrequited pit stops, the sits rocking itself and never quits. Again, that note to kind of forced living without the idea of the use of mental capacity or whatever's left of it. I take down the liquid. Thank you very much. And Pam, we're back on you.
All right. Great comments there. And up next we have Unfeathering Love, Demand, and Cold. And Lauren, would you give that a read for us, please?
I will. The falling dewdrops don't choose their grass. They just rest on who receives and becomes the pearl it bore. Tiptoeing into youthhood, pokes starts with the similar strokes until you finally become lovebirds entwined into the same cord, giving up the rights to flirt. For now, we become stewards, serving each other's needs, weaving juicy love beads, spicing their relationships, spending time in regular courtship, being faithful to his mate, caged together in the same fate. Oh, honey, love seeks your time, coating it with butter as you together chime. For the shoe of your faithfulness requests nurturance of your acceptance. 'Tis easy to search new love, 'cause it charms like a dove. But to sustain love needs efforts on stove. burning off all bitter coats, allowing sweetness to row its boat. Love seems beautiful at the start, but challenging while pulling its cart. If you have courage, hop in, else it's wise to enjoy in country inns. End poem.
Great read, Lenore. Thank you very much. That little tidbit of humor to finish out with nicely placed. It's a two-parter that rolled down through the regular courtship, caged together in the same place, and it gets you that idea of not futility, but actually working. And then that second half walks into that again. The faithfulness, the acceptance, but the sustenance comes is two parts. You got to burn up all those bitter coats, allowing sweetness to row its boat. That notion of, hey, you're going to have fights here and there, but you don't go to bed angry, and you always work your way out of it before that so it doesn't curdle overnight and still be there in the morning. So that the back end of this, if you have courage, hop in, else it's wise to enjoy the country in, is a nice note. Hey, if you can't walk this way, then go the other way. And what about you?
Yeah, I liked this one. I think the prompt 8, which was the lovebird is 100% faithful to his mate who is locked into the same cage, was the most taken from, which is always interesting to see what prompts people gravitate to. I thought these were nicely written couplets. I did like how there was that kind of bit of humor in it. You know, serving each other's needs, weaving juicy love beads, spicing their relationship, spending time in regular courtship. You know, it feels like I like that part. It comes across as a whole idea of trying to spice up the love life with brand new adult toys. I also really like, for the shield of faithfulness requests nurturance of your acceptance. It's easy to search new love because it charms like a dove, but to sustain love needs efforts on stove. You know, there was this quote that Paul Newman's wife asked her, was asked one time, you know, if about her husband's faithfulness, and she said, you know, I believe he's faithful because a man doesn't go out searching hamburger when he has steak at home.
Oh, that kind of reminds me of, what was it, Jar Jar Gabor on Johnny Carson. Can I fetch your pussy? Because she had a cat with her. She says, yes, well, move the cat.
Then, yep.
He had Arnold Palmer's wife on. She said, do you wash your husband's balls? Yeah. Before every golf event. The pun, not really digging into her her mentality.
Yep. Exactly. I enjoyed this. I thought it was a wonderful message on the idea of keeping the heat in the relationship, keeping each other interested in each other, and excellent write.
Thank you, Pam. How about you, Laurent?
I enjoyed this. I had a few questions about the use of words. For instance, giving up the rights to flirt. For now, we become stewards. I don't know whether Stewart is the name of the mate, whether she intended it to be stewards.
I think that's probably right, Stewart.
Yeah, but there's it's some interesting, the use of language almost says that Rain is not, the English is not her first language. I don't know if you know or not.
I don't know offhand.
Okay, it's just the way that the English is presented is rather fascinating to me. It's written differently. At the time that it spends talking about the relationship, is admittedly brief, but it says so much in the lines. Serving each other's need, weaving juicy love beads, speaks to me about satisfying each other's physical desires, being faithful, caged together in the same fate, almost as if the fate says, all right, now you're going to be monogamous. Your enjoyable polygamy is now gone, and you have to hew that line. You have to be faithful. It's to sustain love needs efforts on snow. And I looked at that, and I'm like, what? And all of a sudden I realized, part of love is cooking for your mate, serving meals, and then burning off all bitter coats, allowing sweetness to row its boat, get rid of the bitterness and the anxiety, the resentment in the other, and allow sweetness to emerge all the way through there. Interesting little observations on how to stay married and in love.
Thank you, Laurent. And we're back on you.
Okie dokie, Smokey. Up next, we have Take Advantage by Lee Wei, and it goes like this. Take advantage, convenient inconvenience. Take advantage of small kindnesses, mild manners, thick skin. It's convenient. I've been in a small stripped-down cage, futile rage. You've got words for claws in consideration for a whip. It's canceled plans, backhanded compliments, oily chains tightening over thin, taut skin. Did you want a pet? Did you want a doll to play with when the mood strikes like thunder smacking the sky on a too bright day? How inconvenient. I'm so convenient because I don't bite back. End poem.
Great read, Anne. Thank you very much. All right, Laurent, what do you think about this one?
I'm trying to figure out whether this was written to an adult or a child. Maybe I'm a little too literal. Do you want a pet? Do you want a doll to play with when the mood strikes? Or whether they're talking about the adult partner who wants to use you as a pet or use you as a doll. Like thunder smacking the sky on a too bright day. I'm inconvenient. I'm so convenient because I don't bite back. I just get the sense of a long-suffering mate who is being taken advantage of despite small kindnesses, mild manners, and a thick skin that will take his insults. It's well done.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Tom. Pam, how about you?
Yeah, well, first of all, I did like the short impactful line. I noticed her in her AN, she said, I wanted to do something with an interesting rhythm. I think the choppy line cuts add to the attitude. And I have to agree. Plus, I like that she tried something different. I always appreciate when people do that. And you know what? I can see what you're saying there, Lawrence, and I think you went in the right direction, that it speaks on an adult partnership. Maybe not so much a partnership, but the fact that, you know, he uses the word convenient a couple of times, I feel like this is about being somebody's booty call. You know, when they only need you, like after the bar has closed on a Friday night. And, you know, but it also feels very like somebody caught in an almost abusive cycle. You know, the being struck down, you know, and like this. I really like this all the way through, and it does have a hard edge to it. But I'm particularly drawn to, you've got words for claws in consideration for a whip. It's canceled plans, backhanded compliments, oily chains tightening over thin, taut skin. And it feels like the whole idea of someone who's been so used by this person that they just no longer have any self-esteem. And so just an excellent write and very well done.
Wow, thank you, Pam. I'm going to go with that that note up here. The first few lines down are the description of her, the small kindness of mom and his big skin. It's inconvenient. I've been in small, stripped-down cage, futile rage. The futile hits that note of she's is that mild mannered. She doesn't talk back. And this is kind of that what you'd find in the diary, because that's the only place she can represent her her anger, the futility of it, and add a bit of spite, because she can't there. Now, the second half of this is basically all of him. And those two questions are in direction to him. Did you want the pet? Did you want the doll to play with when the mood strikes? That hits on both notes, the thought of the loyalty of a dog, but yet the that little note, the doll that sits ever so quietly in the corner, never opens up a mouth, has nothing to say, and is always dutiful, so to speak. And how inconvenient, I'm so, so convenient, because I don't fight back, is that thought. She's only there because she doesn't offer anything as a backhanded slap in the moment when it's needed. It is a matter of convenience, and even though he treats her as an inconvenience. So it could be a wife, it could be a lover, it could be just a booty call, but considering how it's written, it's more just a booty call. There's something with a bit of longevity in it. All right, Pam, we're back to you.
All right. Great observations there, Rex. And up next, we have An Ode to a Dodo by Weaver of Dreams. And we have a recording for that, so here we go.
It was a hot summer on the island of Mauritius when the dodo looked up from foraging one day. Said, Doris, what are those things over there? No idea, Dan, but they seem to be coming this way. With that, they both went back to looking for lunch. With no words for hunter or hunted in their lexicon, these unique creatures were sitting ducks. So sad. By 1681, every trusting, wonderful dodo was gone. I read about these birds when I was 12 years old. I've mourned the injustice of their demise since then. Comical, clumsy, incurious, and magical, and then extinct. My heart aches because we'll never see one again.
Great read, Weaver. Thank you for the sound pass. It is very much appreciated. All right, Pam, what you got?
Well, it's always great to hear Weaver do a SoundCloud. You know, I like that she found a quote that she could really relate to, which was the quote about the how the dodo was just destined to become extinct. You know, I like that this is one of those rights that I think adults and children alike can relate to. First of all, personifying the dodos and giving them names, I thought was a nice touch to add to the story. And what I like is that she transitions from the first paragraph being almost like the idea of a story, the life of these two dodos, And even the kind of the second stanza is almost like that too, except for then it goes into more historical facts. And then she becomes personal. I read about these birds when I was 12 years old. I've mourned the injustice of their demise since then. You know, I really like that she wrapped this up with such a personal note, a look into her heart on how she felt at 12 years old. And even now, the idea of here was this completely trusting bird who got killed off because mankind was greedy. And I think though Weaver is known for writing in very straightforward styles and often even says herself she doesn't do metaphor, I think this can work well on a metaphorical level, is the idea of the dodo being, you know, people who are trusting, and in a world that can be so cruel and greedy. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, P.L. Rot, how about you?
This poem succeeds on a number of levels. On the one hand, you know, if you're teaching a child about natural history and the dodo happens to pop up, and, you know, you could say, well, the dodo having no natural predators, blah, 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 you know, living isolated, could not survive the arrival of man, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. How much better would it be to use a little poem like this to explain with humor and intelligence exactly what's going on? I mean, Pam mentioned the different point of views, the first one being the personification of Doris and Dan, which I thought was very clever, then a narrator, and then, of course, the writer herself. It's just so well presented and brief in its excellence.
Excellent. Thank you, Rob. You're right. This does offer itself up that way, and there is a touch of humor in it, although you don't really want to go. It's just the right amount. That thought with Doris and Dan was a nice touch, as well with the sort of these unique creatures were sitting ducks. It's so sad. The idea of what we call sitting ducks today is those ready for the plucking, so to speak. But then again, as you said, she introduces herself as a note to something she learned when she was a young girl. And there's so many things that don't get taught these days, which should be a measured thought to moving forward in history. You can't understand the thought of today and what the future holds if you don't bother teaching what the past held itself. Thank you, Eva. All right, Pam.
All right. And up next, we have Can't Kill 'Em All, But I Can Try by Kingsley Medland. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Well, that sounds like it might be a fun read at that time. Can't kill 'em all, but I can try. Kingsley Medland. Will says, it's a waste of my time, but some people just need to die. They really, really do. But time's a factor. It becomes an issue. How will I get them all? I suppose I could invest in a good chainsaw, put some plastic sheeting down on the floor. Will says, there's so many that I'd never get anything done. Now, I'm not in the business of murder for fun. It's not like I'm a competition that has to be won. I'm not healthy since having COVID, so I'm fucked if they run. And I live in England, so it's hard to purchase a gun or six. I could round them up all, I suppose. Put them on a bus and drive it into a hole. But where else on earth would I start? A sharp knife to the heart? That'll get messy. And it seems a tad slow and potentially hard work. Don't get me wrong. I'm not one to be lazy on my responsibility shirt. But when you've done it, you've got to get those dead buckets in the dirt. That's not always easy. Good thing I live opposite the woods. It gets pretty lonely, and the sort of stuff are really quite lonely. The body disposal won't be a problem. Transportation is a bit of an issue because I drive a convertible. Not all the trunk space in which to hide a body. See, this is why I can't do a murder as a hobby. But some people have just got to die. So where does one start this process? How much time, effort, practice does it take to get it right? Let me whisper this a bit. Something I need to confess. I'm going to go out tonight, but like an evil Santa, I've drawn up a list and I checked it twice. I'm going to get naughty. No more room to be nice. Fuck what Will says. They've just got to go. I'm going to start my own serial killer show. Wait until it starts to get dark. And then I'm starting with a mouthy slacker and he asks the car park. And boom. Okay. He digs into that one. Laurent, why don't you start with you?
I tell you what, this had me smiling right from the get-go. The idea of somebody sitting and moralizing about how he's going to murder people because some people just need to die. They really, really do. I assume that thought is something that's crossed everyone's mind at some point or another without actually ever intending it. And nor do I think this poem is written to show intention for murder, but rather to treat it as something to be laughed at almost. There's a lot of humor in all the detail that he goes through and all the ways in which he could accomplish the task or escape being found out. His rhyming through this is really good. It's intermittent, but consistently intermittent. Good thing I live opposite a wood. It gets pretty lonely, and the soil is soft and really quite loamy, so body disposal won't be a problem. The rhymes preceding a somewhat dry statement, so body disposal won't be a problem, is to me part of the humor. So-called trunk space in which to hide a body. See, this is why I can't do murder as a hobby. Hey, this is wonderful black humor that is paced just right, stealing a little bit from Santa, for instance, which I thought was very clever. And the last line, the mouthy wanker, the ass the car park, is just so delightfully British. I enjoy the line length, short versus rather long, for contrast, yet still managing to maintain a rhyming flow that was very satisfactory. Lovely piece.
Thank you, Ron. Excellent. And Pam, how about you?
I really enjoyed the dark humor of this one. I thought it was a great take off the prompt that he chose, which was, he had also learned that there is no use murdering people. There are always so many left, and if you tried to murder them all, you would never get anything else done. And I like that he brings in Will Cuppy's name. Like, he uses Will's name like he's a friend, and they were just having a conversation. Will says it's a waste of time, but some people just need to die. They really, really do, but time's a factor. Will says there's so many that I'd never get anything done. And you just picture the two of them like sitting down together, having coffee and discussing is it worth it? You know, how many people could I get murdered? What could I murder? What's the best way to do it? Should I invest in a chainsaw? And I like how he brings in, I'm not healthy since having COVID, so I'm fucked if they run, and I live in England, so it's hard to purchase a gun. I like how he brings in, with a sense of humor, current political and social climate, and connects it with the whole idea of, you know, how easy would it be to be able to get murder done. And I have to admit, I don't know what an Asda car park is, but I know what a mouthy wanker is. So that part really cracked me up. Oh, yep. I bet you're right. Yeah. Okay. And, I also really liked, where he mentions transportation is a bit of an issue because I drive a convertible, fuck all trunk space in which to hide a body. See, this is why I couldn't do murder as a hobby. Yeah, it just, you know, the whole thing. It's wonderful dark humor. The rhyme and flow is spot on. And it's just an excellent take on the prompt. So very well done.
Thank you, Pam. The Asda is a supermarket chain. The car park being the parking lot for the supermarket. Anyway, I too like the thought of bringing Will into this, because since he did mention the thought of COVID, that means the heavy layer of stay at home and you can't come outside, so to speak. But it gives one a lot of time to think running through the possibilities, especially when he hits on the throw with a chainsaw, the throw with a knife, the gun, and not having to worry about a place to go because it lives out by the woods. But this is done in a nice, snarky, satirical way because of, well, like that wanker at the bottom end besides him, and a bunch of other ones. Hey, what else you got to do besides watch TV, old movies, and something else where you can't go outside? Just start thinking, how do I do it? Just start planning. Ah, this won't work. This won't work. And you run through the whole scenario from top to bottom, from doing the deeds to actually disposing of the bodies, and the fact that, damn, I'm having a bit of trouble on the breathing bag, so I can't run after the parking. So I can't get a gun. That looks dynamite. It was done well. I liked it. It didn't disappoint. Yeah. Well, the title was nice and catchy, so, and it did make for a fun read, as well as holding down a lot of humor in it as well. All right, Pam, we're back to you.
All right. Up next, we have Life Can't Be Helped by Darkened Auras. And Laurent, will you give that a read for us, please?
Yes, Pam, I will. We all start out in life pushed out toward the light, cold and naked, shouting, but they say your future's bright. Then as kids pushed by bullies or by parents to be great, problems piling on in heaps, too much on your plate. Then it's college to get a better job and working hard to pay the bills, thinking all the while of being rich and wondering how it feels. Yet you remain in an endless loop until you finally can retire. And by then, life has passed you by, snatched your true desire. Maybe you beat the odds, no cancer or deadly disease. But as the number of age rises, death slips on in with ease. Your senses start to leave you. Your bones become so brittle. You revert back to wearing diapers like when you were little. Finally, when you're old and tired, just like when you were whelped, you'll be pushed towards a light. Life just can't be helped. End poem.
Great read, Rob. Boy, this is loaded with a lot of irony. I like that that opening stanza, the push out, and then turns it back around and finishes off with the very same thought. Finally, when you're old and tired, just like when you were well, you'll be pushed towards the light. Life just can't be helped. Notes to a bit of a satirical humor in this, too, the sort of diapers up front to begin with, and diapers when you're on the back end of this, too. So, damn. Yeah, ain't ironic. You work so damn hard, and by the time you get down to a sit down to enjoy it, shit, there ain't no time left. Pam, how about you?
I did enjoy this one. You know, as always, Darkened Aura has great rhyme and flow. There's an irony to this. You know, one of my favorite things about finding prompts that have a slight, like a bite of humor to them, is you often get in response writes that offer up the same kind of vibe. You know, this I like how she goes with the whole circle of life theme, and you know how we start out towards the light, going towards light, and we end going towards the light, and we start the beginning of life in diapers, and we start the end, and we have the ending of life in diapers. I really like I did have a more serious thought, and maybe you beat the odds, no cancer or deadly disease, but as the number of age rises, death slips on in with ease. You know, to me, you know, it just speaks on that, yeah, you might get lucky, but at the same time, it's unavoidable. You know, death is there. It's going to it's going to show up in one form or another or one time or another. I think this is a very relatable rite, and the idea that we all in our own way, you know, I think, I don't know if we necessarily fear death, but it's definitely, you know, not, you know, something that comes on our mind, especially the later in life it becomes. I also really like, yet you remain in an endless loop until you finally can retire, and by then life has passed you by, snatched your true desires. That I like how that touches on the idea of being so busy taking care of everybody else that you never really get to live the full potential of your dreams. Well, really thoughtful, right, and very well done.
Thank you very much, Pam. And Laurent, you got to read it. How about you?
And this poem speaks rather well about the inevitability of age. Certain things are just automatic. It reminds me, for some reason, a little bit of the riddle of the Sphinx, where a man walks on two legs, or where a man walks on four, crawls as a baby, two legs as an adult on the noon of his life, three legs walking with a cane at the end of his life. It's going to arrive, whether you want to or not. The way that makes the manner in which he writes this is what makes the poem interesting. His use of language and of metaphor, modernizing the whole idea, perhaps college, paying bills, thinking of being rich, but it's that endless loop that you experience until you can retire. And yeah, Pam, relatable, but unfortunately relatable. I liked it.
Excellent. Thank you a lot. All right, Pam, what you got next?
All right. Up next, we have Withering into the Silent Shadows by Rurouni 664. And it goes like this. It can't be helped. The curse mark is embedded in him. The name Whitley is frowned upon. Outcast, he didn't start the fire, but he will burn in the blaze of their scorn. His head in his hands, he wonders, is he born just to be blamed? Lineage of looks down on someone to kick, bruised physically and mentally, everyday rite of passage, muddled in the malaise of life. He is a misanthrope for his environment, weapon of choice in his wrathful wit, lined with more bruises, accept his fate as a ne'er-do-well, pariah in the park onslaught of gossip from the parish. Hissed at, he hisses back, snake in the grass, slithering into the silent shadows. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. All right, Laurent, what do you think about this?
You unmute, Laurent?
Sure enough. It had to happen at some point, I guess. Unavoidable. His head in his hands. He wonders, his head in his hands. He wonders, is he is born just to be blamed? Lineage of look down on someone to kick, bruised physically and mentally, everyday rite of passage, muddled in the malaise of life. He is a misanthrope from his environment. never satisfied. Critical, perhaps. Grouchy. Weapon of choice is his wrathful wit, lined with more bruises. His wordplay is excellent. Alliteration is quite good as well. This is... Okay, it's a fictional piece. I wasn't sure whether he was feeling that way or not. Um, Great piece.
Excellent. Thank you, Laurent. Okay.
Okay. Yes, I thought this was a wonderful story poem. I liked how it was about the main theme, of course, to me being that, you know, people, when you treat them like snakes, will bite. It's that whole idea of being born into a family that the family that the parish gossips about, and so therefore they don't judge you on your own merits. They judge you based on where you were born. Bruised physically and mentally, every day rite of passage, muddled in the malaise of life, he is a misanthrope from his environment. You get the impression that of somebody who lives in a very abusive environment and doesn't really have a safe place, because while they're judged and abused at home, they're also judged by the church parish, which is somewhere they should be able to go for protection. And I really thought this was an excellent write all the way through, and especially those end lines, hiss that he hisses back, snake in the grass, slithering into the silent shadows. And it really gives food for thought in the whole idea of, are you destined to be evil based on where you are born, or is evil created because of the way society treats you? You know, just a really thoughtful write and very well done.
Well, thank you, Pam. That's where I was going. Nature, virtue, nurture. And while that opening stanza, it can't be helped, the curse mark is embedded in him. Well, that had me thinking of Cain, the mark of Cain, that which is, which he hits on the last stanza, the burn in the blaze of their scorn. That second stanza, and hits him on the angle of the people themselves. And the third one walks in that note of his creation, weapon of choice, his wrathful wit. Hissed at, he hits his back, snake in the grass, slid him into the silent shadows. Again, that kind of notation within the Bible itself. Hey, you create this monster, then you still bitch at him because he is who he is. At your creation, you got what you asked for. You wanted someone to blame, and he's not conforming to your view of things. All right, Pam, where you want to go next?
I have a silly question. Who read that last poem?
Ree Rooney, 664.
Yeah. Oh, come on, the three of us.
Which one?
Yeah, who read the wrong? Yeah.
What about it?
Yeah, I'm asking, who read it?
Oh.
Rex did.
Yes.
Rex, okay. Okay. Okay.
Oh, he's lining up readers.
Yeah. I just couldn't, oh my goodness, I apologize. I couldn't freaking remember who had read it. Are you
short term memory loss can be damaging.
I think it's your
turn,
dear.
I think so. Okay. No problem. All right. So all right. Apparently it's just too late at night for me to remember simple things like who read. All right. Up next, we have Golden Cage by Betty Page. Hey, that's a nice rhyme. All right. And it goes like this. Trapped in golden cage, resisting the urge to fly. Silly butterflies, gazing in her eyes, reciprocal enchantment, flitting each their wings, mesmerized by love, needing not to go somewhere, so warm, cozy here. Melodical high, drifting back and forth in tune, harmonizing sweet, faithful, devoted, crowns adorning above heads, traveling pink clouds, amidst bright rainbows, sunlight kisses rosy cheeks, giggling magic, mysteriously getting lost within treasures, jewels, such lonely hearts. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. She might said that note of the bird in the golden cage. It's got no voice to sing. Then off sub that note to a silly butterflies and the sort of what's in there with her. That note to faithful and devoted, crowns adorning above heads, straddling pink clouds. There's such an enchanted view of seeing that which is perfect or dreamlike, or the notion within the idea of finding that that portion which seeks. Because she hits up mysteriously, getting lost within treasures, jewels, such lonely hearts. Again, a little bit, the lonely hearts being, hey, if you don't try and work the magic within the cage, then it ain't working either way. Laurent, how about you?
Yeah, that golden cage of love. When she says, gazing in her eyes, reciprocal enchantment, flitting each their wings, mesmerized by love, needing not to go somewhere, so warm, cozy here. You don't want to leave that golden cage because it doesn't feel like a cage. It does give you that melodical high that she speaks of. Faithful, devoted, well, it's an invisible cage, isn't it? And you are caged by your love. Let the love evaporate, and faithfulness really does as well. But in the meantime, I'm not saying that would happen, but mysteriously getting lost within treasures, jewels, such lonely hearts, each heart satisfied with the other. It is a beautiful little piece, isn't it?
Absolutely. Thank you all. Pam, you read it? What about you?
Yeah, I thought it had wonderful imagery. I really like that she writes about a cage that it's that a person wants to stay in. And I thought that came across really nice with her choice of metaphors and imagery, where she mentions, where she says in the beginning, trapped in golden cage, resisting the urge to fly, silly butterflies. You just, you know, get the whole idea that these butterflies could slip between the bars if they really wanted to, but they don't. They want to stay. And I like the use of the butterflies, too, because it kind of makes you think of that whole butterflies in the stomach feel when you're high on love. I also really liked melodical high, drifting back and forth in tune, harmonizing sweet, faithful, devoted, crowns adorning above head, traveling pink cloud. This feels like that whole idea of that kind of almost that love is blind type feel of, you know, where everything is like you're wearing those rose-colored glasses at the beginning of a relationship. You know, it's just really wonderful and very well done.
Ed, back to you again.
Did you already comment?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Very odd.
That's because I did the first one.
Oh, you have been doing that tonight. Yeah, you've been throwing me off by commenting first on some of them. That's a bit different. All right.
Well, there's only two. I keep handing it back to one or the other after they've read it. It kind of throws off the page as well.
Yeah,
So.
Yep, makes sense. All right. And up next we have Weirdly Iconic Heartache by Echoed. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Weirdly Iconic Heartache by Echoed. I'll send you straight to heaven with this flaming omen sword of mine. I'll step in. Oh, it gets me nowhere to tell you yet. Liars, cheaters, fraudulent lovers, I'm not the best at choosing warriors to defend my castle. But I can lend a hand, grapple or grab a battle. I'm laughable with an insidious smile. Creep show, Mr. Raiders has 13 Friday babies, all born on a 666 lunar Corinthian birthday, who all were sacrificed to Hades. Just to show up at my door, open arms and explore my file, oh, saltless boxes, wild side of that rock at the door. The glorious glossary, the deposit roster of rotted bees, fresh from the honeycomb, searching for trees, a fresh banana, one so one can openly shit on me. Meanwhile, the daffy last meal of greater ones, certainly outworn by a pillow, bulky, walky, grease. And I guess my ghostly battered wine of a mind was cursed by Pluto along just three wise time in the flashiest edition yet, this tragic end of mine. An elevated wind chime made from Estragon prune vine, miles and mages, oh so softly coerced into favors to shine, just a tip, just a breathless drug addict, too shy to be penis blind. A date-to-date rape isn't yeast to treat for a sweet meat, slipped on a razor, repeat until beef. Dropped off a decanter stick ride to Armageddon, fuck you Satan, I'ma stick my macaroni in 11. Into your septum, die for my sins, I quit that cigarette, never got a regret, another sunset, lost profit. Child molesting rape, I'll break every bone in your body till there's nothing left, but I'll send you straight to heaven with this flaming omen sword of time and 2-4 friends, 24/7. All right, Pam, what do you got?
All right, well, first of all, great read there, Rex. This definitely had an intriguing style. You know, it was very edgy, gritty, definitely some difficult subject matter in choice of phrasing. The general idea I get is the battle against evil, not only the evil inside ourselves, like, you know, fighting, but then the idea of fighting addiction and fighting against the evil of society. I really particularly like all born on 666 lunar Corinthian birthdays, who all were sacrificed to Hades just to show up at my door, open arms, and explore my mild, old, salted, Marxist, wild side of that rotten implore, the glorious glossary deposit roster of rotted bees fresh from the honeycomb. You know, there you just get the feeling, especially when they bring up things like child abuse and a fresh banana one so one can openly shit on me. You get the feeling of someone being used, of being sick and tired of being used. The dropped off at the campstick ride to Armageddon, I quit that cigarette, never going to regret. I like the idea the cigarette can come across as literally like the idea of giving up smoking. It can also work well figuratively, you know, metaphorically, as in any giving up any type of addiction. And I'll send you straight to heaven with this flaming omen sword of time and 2-4 friends. That's interesting to me because this feels like, you know, somebody who's confronting Satan and yet at the end offers up the idea of sending Satan, sending the child molester, you know, sending, you know, to heaven. Or perhaps I'm reading it wrong, that last part is actually about sending themselves to heaven. So perhaps it's the idea of driving the sword into themselves. I'm not 100% sure, but I will say I thought the use of imagery and phrasing was definitely attention-grabbing and potent. So very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Laurent, how about you?
Hell of a piece, huh? This is presented in a hyperkinetic, almost stream of consciousness style, as a big fuck you to the evils of addiction and the damage we take, the damage we suffer doing it. But very refreshing in a certain way to read how he handles language. My mild, assaulted Marxist wild side of that rotten implore the glorious glossary deposit roster of rotted bees. You can shake up that bee's nest and you're going to have some rather rotted and wrathful bees to deal with. And that, of course, can stand as a metaphor for almost anything that, once you poke it, it's going to kind of come back at you. I liked it. I liked it a great deal.
Thank you, Rock. There is a pop in here, right near the first few lines, but I can lend a hand, grapple, rap a battle, I'm laughing with the city. So I'm gathering he had a thought to a beat behind this, and, well, I didn't get that, but he does walk on that tone. You see, it's on a Friday baby walking out of Corinthian birthday, sacrifice to Hades. And he rolls in on, he does, like you said, he hits on another thing, the wine mind, kind of hits on the sort of the drug addict thought. And there is the evils that that plague the world, so to speak, and those that get caught up within those. And then the admit to die for my sins. I quit that cigarette, never got a regret for the sense that you lost carbon, offering up that sort of Satan being the one who diddles most people into that which they are weakest to, so to speak, their way. He has it into the deeper things that he can profit from. So I do like the bottom, and he opened up with the thought with the Atlantic sword, and then again hit it on the back end. So it is trying to send it back to get redressed, maybe re-educated, and reaffirmed. Nicely done, Ecos. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, back to you.
All right. Up next, we have Note for Aaron by Peter Solway. And, Laurent, will you give that a read for us, please?
Happily. Note for Aaron. Flowers at waterfall's entrance under sign. Map of tracks for walking. Wildlife shots. Forest purchased. Her name spelt out in rocks. Drawing of angels cross creek. Notes of hopeful thoughts. Love's release in crayon, ink. Altar of tangled grass. With more important blooms placed quick. Makeshift shrine of remembrance at base of an indifferent tree. Lone bouquet on cliff. Aaron, no more to leap. Rest in peace. Scribbled note from pad ripped. Farewell, cruel fate. All decisions, outcomes, halted at the splashing base. Gone the way of lone extinction. Friends and family grieving. Florist selecting. Supermarket rejecting. No more a miserable teen. Sport and homework all done. Locals in uniform to descend, shattered reasons, scraped from bottom. Darwinian assignment to hand in, dodos without speed or flight. Fat Aaron with no chance of winning in the slick race of swift civilization. Hooded snake poised to strike, back uninformed sign at entrance. Useless sentiments to pen. Heels on sandstone, leeches on stockings. Small tribe of weeping women, car park clutching, men folk driving, sunset hissing, be gone, be gone, all wet, life eager for the ocean. End poem.
Great read, Laurent, and a very different voice for from Peter. All right, Pam.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there, Rex. It was a different voice. It was definitely more of a straightforward style. Definitely still has the same edge, though, that oftentimes his writing does. I thought it's always interesting to me to see people take the same prompt in different approaches, because he didn't put his prompt down, but it's obviously took the same one as Weaver, who is more literal. And here we have the whole idea approaching both literal and metaphorical in the idea of the cruelty of society. And you look at the life, and especially the moment of jumping for this young woman, and the idea that of how cruel fate can be. And you can't help but think, at least I can't help but think, when you read a poem like this, or even in reality, when you see news stories like about, you know, young people who commit suicide, and, you know, and then you hear of all the people grieving, and it's like, where were all these people when they were still alive? And how much of grief is nothing more than the guilt we feel for not noticing? I really liked this one all the way through. I thought it was a great take on the prompt, but I particularly was drawn to Drawing of Angels, Cross Creek, Notes of Hopeful Thoughts, Love's Release, and Crayon Ink, Altar of Tangled Grass, with more imported blooms, Safe Quick. And Darwinian Assignment to Hand In, Dodos Without Speed or Flight, Fat Aaron with No Chance of Winning, and The Slick Race of Swift Civilization, Footed Snake Poised to Strike Back, Uninformed Sign at Entrance. There's this whole idea that whether it's during school time, like when you're a child, or during adult, when you're an adult, bullies know who to attack. It's just a powerful write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Laurent, you got to read it. How about you?
Well, I thought that Pam gave a more than adequate analysis of this piece. I did get the sense of a suicide early on with the flowers and the names spelled out. In rocks, you know, the lone bouquet on the cliff, that makeshift shrine of remembrance, at base of an indifferent tree. What a great use of words right there, an indifferent tree. The line, Fat Aaron, with no chance of winning in the slick race of swift civilization, really cut at me, because you immediately see a person who is verbally tortured and chastised for her weight, who pulled back, and to describe swift civilization as a hooded snake poised to strike is, I think, really nice, because if you're not ready for it, life will literally strike at you in exactly that way. A person who might have liked to have been a chameleon, if I can refer back to one of the earlier poems, but could never be, because she stood out, but she didn't want to stand out, didn't have the defenses. So we have useless sentiments, the pen, heels on sandstone, leeches on stockings, small tribe of weeping women, car park clutching, men folk driving, sunset hissing. And then to finish with life eager for the ocean, a return to the great mother, that great wet oblivion from which we all sprang. It's a deep piece, very moving piece, very good poem.
Thank you, Ron. Great comments, both of you. But I got the impression those first two stanzas or something before, something that was held for others, not the Aaron, because they're above instead of below. And I'll go to different book. That second stanza hits on the first. They hit on two very different things, except that very last line, the second stanza, lone bouquet on cliff. Everything else seems to be perfectly adorned with someone else. Flora's purchased her name spelled out, rocks. Then those notes, drawing angels or of angels cross creek, seem to be for somebody else, somebody more popular. The lone bouquet on cliff kind of hits on that thought of to Aaron. And Aaron had no more to leave, rest in peace, scribbled out from pad, ribs, farewell, cruel fate, all decisions, outcomes, all in a splashing face. And he hits again, shattered reasons, scrap from Boston. But on the back end of this, useless sentiments to pen, heels on sandstone, leeches on stocking, small tribe of weeping women, car park budging, menfolk driving, sunset hissing, begone, begone, all wet light, eager for the ocean. Well, the note to that is, hey, we crawled out of the ocean, some at the back end, we crawl back into it, so to speak. But it does seem to be that there's a little bit, noting the, especially he hits on that Aaron as one point, and gone the way of lone extinction, the dodo who can't fly, so to speak, doesn't know how to deal with things. So I'm not saying those first two might be in reference, but I don't get the impression that for her, it looks upon as though those first two were other people, and hers is barely adorned or even noticed. Nicely done, Peter. Thank you very much. All right, Pam.
All right. Up next, we have Recluse by Julie Buck, and it goes like this. As a brain-imposed recluse, I resent the world for not accommodating my anomalies. I don't even care to step out on my deck. Nature, too, did not adapt to my needs. Never did I expect this, agoraphobia first decades ago, as a social person, that mental hit was fucking low. Always indoors, a solitarian, I told myself it's cool. It's just me and my inability and eventually my desire to not go there. There being out of my home, and until or if society conforms, I'll stay in my comfort zone and in my own head, kind of like a misunderstood Catholic priest who can't explain the altar boy in his bed. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. All of this walk, that ease of tone, noting out the, how agoraphobia is so debilitating. And the thought of, hey, why should I have to explain myself to that which I cannot deal with yet? Offering up that last two lines with a kind of comic finality to the reality of what we all do on the outside. I'm on the inside. Shouldn't be worried about me. There are other things out there that you should be worrying about. Laurent, how about you?
The prompt, a hermit, is simply a person to whom civilization has failed to adjust itself. Sounds clever, but it's kind of ridiculous if you think about it, except to realize, except to demonstrate that there are those people who have agoraphobia, and it's going to be impossible for civilization to adjust itself around a tiny speck of humanity. Therefore, it is the person who has to adjust but can't, therefore does not go out there, stay in the comfort zone and in my own head, and then that deadly ending, kind of like a misunderstood Catholic priest who can't explain the altar boy in his bed. It just, that made the poem for me right there.
Absolutely. Thank you. All right, Pam, you got to read it. You get to finish.
All right. Well, yeah, I have to agree. That was a great ending. That at first, when I read this earlier today, did throw me for a loop, but then I realized it was touching on the idea that, you know, people are so concerned with people who mildly don't fit into society, who aren't hurting anybody but themselves. When, as you mentioned, Rex, there's bigger problems out there. I like, Lauren, that you brought up the idea of how, you know, all of society can't be expected to adjust to one person. It reminds me of my high school German teacher who said, you study and you learn the German because when we go to Germany on the class trip, you cannot expect a whole country to speak English for you. You have to go there knowing German. And so that's what it made me think of. And, you know, I like that this is about the idea of somebody who is dealing with that low of agoraphobia and, you know, just can't and feels like they can't explain their mental illness to anybody. Definitely a great write and very well done.
All right. Where would you like to go now?
All right. That is a good question. Let's see. What did I grab? All right. Ah, yes. Devour Like a Lion by Lauren 67. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read, please.
All right. Devour Like a Lion by Lauren 67. The Adventures of Nigel the Fat Cat and His Homie Alfie. Heads, tails, legs, eyeballs. Hey, Alfie, what you guys doing? Oh, hey, Nigel. We're playing Devour the Lion here at the zoo. How do you play that? Well, you see, Nigel, you see that sleeping lion over in the corner? Yeah, so? Well, me and the other animals at the zoo are pretending that we're going to eat the lion, so we're ordering our favorite parts. Well, what happens if the lion wakes up? Roar, roar, roar. Oh, you mean like that? We run like hell. Yikes, help. Roar, roar. Oh, shit, he's got one of the monkeys. A Peter York damp. There's nothing left of it. And now he's got a zebra.
Time out. Technical foul.
And now he's chasing those illegal migrant mice. Arriba, andale. He's chasing the roadrunner, Mimi. He's got a parrot. Bawk.
Leo, want a cracker?
Jump. I don't think I want to play this game.
Arr. And,
cool. Another different one. All right, Pam.
All right. Well, first of all, great read there, Rex. I was smiling and laughing not only at the humor of the write, but at your read and your especially the growling. I have to say, you know, that you could have been the that movie company that had the MGM Studios. You could have been the MGM Studio Lion. And let's see, he wrote to the prompt, some people lose all respect for the lion unless he devours them instantly. There is no pleasing some people. And just like Betty Page, he related to the prompt, but in his own Lawrence 67 way. I enjoyed this all the way through, but especially the humor in the beginning where they're listing off the different body parts of the lion that they're going to eat. And then, of course, when the thing wakes up roaring and they all go running, he's got a parrot, bawk. Leo won a cracker, chomp. You know, just great humor, fun to read, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Laurent, how about you?
As you were reading that, I couldn't help but think of guys in the movies who make the sound effects. What is it called? Foley, I think. At any rate, you threw your spirit right into that. Kind of brought it alive. I like that. And, of course, humor is one of the best methods of really driving home a point, if you will. So the lion, once he's out, beginning to chase and eat all the other animals, is the epitome of the quote. Unless he devours them instantly, there's no pleasing some people. Absolutely true. I like the way he did it. I really do.
Yeah, Lawrence always brings some fun and some laughs to the show. I got a kick out of the right there, down near the end, and now he's got a zebra. And the zebra, as in referee style. Timeout. Technical foul. Go back to your corner. A little bit of an interposed funny there. And then dropping Speedy Gonzalez. I wasn't expecting that. And the Roadrunner. And I missed on the bark, Leo Wanna Crack. I missed that. I should have gone with a duck. Leo Wanna Crack. Oh, another funny piece. I don't know where you're getting all this stuff from, Lawrence, but keep bringing them on board. All right, Pam, we're back to you.
All right. Up next, we have Free Fall by Grey Wolf. And, Lawrence, will you give that a read for us, please?
Yes, ma'am. Free Fall. Aboard the aircraft, metaphorical, bearing those employed by companies large and small. A moment arrives when the cryptic overhead lights instruct that the time to leave has come. Passengers are led to the open door at the rear of the fuselage, where they will leap into the mist. The happy few will be strapped into a designer backpack, filled with a carefully packed parachute of luminous gold. Others are handed a sturdy bundle which holds a life-saving paraglider of shining silver. A group somewhat more numerous gratefully accept their sustaining dome of spun silk and exit with confidence. The greatest number will be in a line leading past a toilet paper dispenser. Each individual to be ejected will be allotted a single sheet. The one-ply tissue will be printed as follows. Grasp tissue firmly on opposite sides. Hold tissue above head, parallel with ground. A hearty cry of good luck follows them as they are assisted through the door by a well-placed boot. End poem.
Great read, Lenore. I like this one. It's chock full of sarcasm and the dodo note with that tissue paper LW head parallel with the ground was a great touch at the end. And with a hearty cry, good luck. Follows them as they are assisted to the door by a well-placed boot. Yeah, get that L out. Get that note. Why would anybody want to jump out of a plane that is perfectly good? Well, some people would do anything if they're told to or forced to. I like this one. That's a good. Pam, what about you?
Yeah, I really have to say I enjoyed this one also. The bite of humor. He wrote to prompt 9, which was, I am billed as a humorist, but of course I am a tragedian at heart. And I like that Grey Wolf manages to walk that fine line of showing us how something can be both humorous and tragic at the same time. I like how this takes a look at the whole idea of those who will willingly trust, you know, and, you know, the whole idea of jumping out, holding on to a piece of toilet paper, it's so absolutely ridiculous and hysterical, and yet it does make a great point in the whole idea of how we will trust people with nothing more than, you know, shit on toilet paper. And I really liked how he delivered line after line, and then grasped tissue firmly on opposite sides, whole tissue above head parallel with ground. A hearty cry of good luck follows them as they are assisted through the door by a well-placed boot. It's an excellent, clever right, and very well done.
Absolutely. All right. You managed to hold that laugh until the end. What do you think?
Well, I mean, it speaks so cleverly to today's companies. If a person leaves, a certain person leaves, or if the company folds and goes out of business, a select few have what's obviously called the golden parachute.
Yeah.
Strong retirement benefits, huge severance package that might be a year's salary, or in some cases, millions of dollars for a CEO who has come, overseen the company for a few years, then left again. And then that lower level of management, albeit not with golden parachutes, but silver, they're well taken care of. Then the average worker, of course. And sometimes the average worker can feel like all that's between him and a disastrous fall is a piece of tissue paper that's not going to do you a damn bit of good. A very, very clever, great way of looking at the whole argument of, the whole discussion of how we treat workers in today's society.
Absolutely. That was a lot of fun. Back to you, Pam.
Well, I'm just going to have us carry our two carryovers, Scott Sharp and Leela, to next week.
Okay.
If you want to mention a couple of upcoming shows, a great show tonight, Rex.
Well, we've got Stray Cat for Sunday, and we got Frank Zappa for this time next Tuesday. And Stones from Stray Cat for Sunday.
Hey, Rex.
Yes.
You familiar with that Zappa song, Brown Shoes Don't Make It?
Not offhand.
Oh, that jumps right to my mind.
The one that always comes
out with nasty song.
Don't You Go With a Husky Zone, Don't Do That Yellow Snow. And I'm going to Montana to pick me some dental floss. And it was
but I like Dynamo Hum.
The Muffin Man.
Yeah, he's got some great ones. He's a hell of a guitarist.
Yes. He was a funky guy all the way around.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
And I do want to mention that Twisted Tuesdays with the Twisted Sisters, Bill is running a contest, Watercolor Thoughts. We are looking for poetry for that show if anybody is interested. And, just make sure to check out all the contests put out by our late night poets, hosts, and hosts, because you're sure to find something to inspire.
All right, Jay. All right, great show, Pam. Thanks for sticking in with us, Lauren. And thank you, Randy, for joining us. Pleasure. And we'll be doing this again next week. Have a nice evening, everybody.
Good night, all.
Good night, Ralph.
Good night.
All right, Pam, good night to you, too. And until next week.